free at last. Free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
Ladies and gentlemen, August Donnelly.
Good day or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are, and welcome once again to Full Frontal on CHRW 94.9 FM. It's Monday, it's 7:30 p.m., so let's get down to business. I have a great interview all queued up here, so I really don't even have time to get to any listener email or make my usual caustic remarks about the state of the world at present. So alas, you'll have to settle for what I have in store. Recently, I sat down with Dan McClellan, the lead news anchor for Chum Television's A Channel right here in London, Ontario. You know him, you love him, and you can see him on television every night at 6 and 11 p.m. I have to say, Dan is an engaging and gracious individual, and I appreciate the warm reception I was given at the A Channel studio. So without further delay, yours truly, joined by Dan McClellan. Enjoy. As promised, I am now joined by Dan McClellan, lead news anchor with Chum Television's 8 Channel News right here in London. Dan, thanks a lot for being here.
Not a problem.
I guess there's just a whole bunch of questions to ask you, given your experience in the media and the fact that so many people in the southwestern Ontario region see you on television every night. First off, I guess a question that most people would be curious about is, do you recall when you first became interested in broadcasting and or news, you know, as a potential career? Did it happen early on in life, or was it the intervention of a certain professor or teacher along the line that influenced your decision?
Well, I'll try and keep it to the thumbnail sketch, but having been born in Cape Breton, I think it's just a natural attribute that we're born with the gift of gab. And I grew up in a household that was always very information savvy. My grandparents lived across the street. My grandfather was a regular listener of the local news talk radio station, and we'd listen to the call-in programs and have a good chuckle. But from there, I was involved with speech and drama. I won a public speaking award when I was 11 years old. So there was that natural inclination, but I moved in a different direction when I graduated from high school. I enlisted in the Canadian Forces as a naval reservist and did that for several years. Happened to come home on leave one summer, and like most good quintessential Canadian stories, this happens in the Tim Hortons, but walked into the Tim Hortons and happened to bump into an old high school English teacher who looked at me in uniform and said, "What are you doing?" And I explained to her, you know, that I was in the forces, quite happy with the way things were going, but she convinced me that, you know, that my future was somewhere else. And the more I thought about it, the more it made sense, and lo and behold, here I am today.
So was your launch or your start, was it with radio or television, or did you do a bit of both?
It was radio. In fact, while I was still in school, I was tapped by Jim Crichton, who is the news director at 96CHNS Radio in Halifax, and ironically is now a colleague of mine at A Channel down in Windsor. A great fellow. But what I started to do when I was in college is I would call up the radio station and say, "Look, I know you don't have a reporter going to this event. I have to go as part of a class assignment. How about I file a 30-second voicer for you," or, you know, things along that line. Mm-hmm. And so that ended up with an internship, and I started at 96CHNS. Loved it. Some great professionals. I was able to, you know, basically, you know, learn by their side and, you know, pick up, you know, various tricks of the trade, so to speak. And that led to a couple of other radio gigs, but eventually I started at ATV in Halifax because I just hounded them with resumes and demo tapes to the point where I think they just hired me to shut me up.
So I guess if your advice would be, if I want to continue to move onward and upward in the radio
just
world,
annoy
just annoy you. You'll get me into the A Channel. I'll get you to annoy, you know, NBC, or we'll get you on the Tonight Show. That's perfect. So pestering does work.
Yes, it does.
Is what you're saying.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Well, perseverance and pestering, yes.
Okay. Probably more perseverance than the latter. Now, like I mentioned before, obviously you're clearly seen as the face of the A Channel News for a fairly large population. I mean, southwestern Ontario, London alone, of course, has nearly 500,000 people. We're talking Windsor, London, you know, Wingham, all the way as far east as Toronto. People can at least tune in if that isn't their local broadcast. Do you find that to be intimidating or daunting at times when you stand in front of the camera? Or was your first time, say, with the A Channel or on television in front of the camera, was it a state
of
nerves?
Oh, I certainly remember, you know, the first few times when I started in television in Halifax. I mean, I was just trembling. And the fact of the matter was, after, going through, what was it, 3 years of schooling, I mean, I was only 21 years old when I started on air as a reporter.
On television.
Wow. And that was fine because, I mean, when you were doing a taped broadcast in, what we call in the business a stand-up, where you stand in front of the camera and, bridge, from one thought to another within your story, that was fine because it was on tape.
Right.
But then they started introducing me to, what we call in the business live hits, where you introduce your story,
yeah,
where you have a Q&A with the anchor at the end of your story. And I just remember there were times where I don't even think I realized what was coming out of my mouth. It was just just really, really nervous. But the irony that I find in this business is that, I realize we have a newscast that's watched by approximately 100,000 people a night, and when that little red tally light comes on top of the camera, I mean, I have a conversation with the lens, so to speak. It's almost as if I envision that, I'm looking at you, August, sitting across from me, and we're having a conversation. But at the same time, when I'm asked to host live events, going down to the convention center and standing, on a stage in front of that ballroom with 1,500 people, I find myself getting nervous. And I just find that so ironic that, on the one hand, we can anchor a newscast, myself and Kathy, and 100,000 people watch us. But, there's just a different vibe when you get up in front of that live audience, so to speak.
Can you tell the listeners, if you don't mind,
what's
a typical day for you at the station? Like, what does it entail? What time do you arrive? What time do you kind of go home? Do you prepare your own stories? Do you take information from reporters in the field?
Well, I've essentially become a night owl as a result of the hours that I work. My day actually starts as soon as I wake up, and I try not to sleep in too late, but I do work until midnight. And, and people will often say, well, why aren't you up bright and early in the morning? Well, okay, if you work 9 to 5, do you necessarily go to bed at 6 o'clock or 7?
Can I interrupt you for one second? Hold your thought, because I don't want you to lose it. This you've always got a good answer for anything I ask. But this is so funny that you mentioned that, because I think I said those exact words to somebody recently, because I myself, given my radio shows on in the evening and things like that, I tend to be a bit of a night owl too.
Right.
I don't sleep until all hours of the afternoon. But somebody said to me, I wrote an email to them, I think they got it at 2 in the morning or something like that.
Right.
But if I don't get home till 11 or 12, I don't go to bed right away. Just like you said, if you work 9 to 5, I think my mother or my sister or somebody asked me, they said, why did you send me an email at 2 o'clock in the morning? I said, what are you doing? Are you drunk? Are you on drugs?
Oh,
what are you doing up that late? I said, Mom, you work what, 8 to 4, 9 to 5? Do you go to bed at 6 o'clock when the sun's up?
Yeah,
and
I've been known to fire off missives to my news director or to other employees at 2:30, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And, I often wonder sometimes, when they actually open up the email and happen to look at the time it was sent, whether they think I'm certifiable or not. But to get back to your original question, as soon as I get up, the first thing I do, aside from making a coffee, is I head into my little office, get on the computer, and I start going through sites like National News Watch, Bork News Watch, CTV.ca, CBC, checking all of the various wire services as well, because Reuters, they're also online, just to get a sense of what the big picture is shaping up like, for the day,
exactly,
so to speak. I mean, obviously we're going to have certain stories here that are, specifically of London or immediate area, in terms of importance, but to get a sense of the broad picture, that's what I try to do. And I get in here usually at about just before 3 o'clock. And the first thing that we'll do is we'll get everyone together, and they have what we call an afternoon news meeting, an editorial meeting, where essentially they're bringing me up to speed on what they've worked on throughout the day, and whatever input I can provide in terms of, story direction or ideas. I also do a lot of, we have updates that we have in the afternoon.
Yep.
There's one that I will write for our sister station, Bob FM here. And from there, it's, good evening coming up tonight on 8 Channel News at 6. We're following this, and this is why you should watch, and this is why it's important to you, that sort of thing. I also put together the headlines of the show, the first minute. And then after that, it's essentially because we have reporters mm-hmm. who are writing their stories, so they need to be vetted, obviously. And then if there's something that I can think of that I think would sharpen up a lead a little better, then that's what I'll do. And then from there, it's a matter of just familiarizing myself with the copy in the show, rewriting as I see fit, adding as we see fit. Obviously, we have to consult with our producers on that.
Right.
And then, the show goes on at 6, and then at the end of the broadcast at 7, then we're gearing up for our 11 o'clock broadcast.
Yeah, so it is a pretty perpetual motion
machine. I mean, and that's the way I like it. I mean, I don't want to be in a situation where I'm just kind of, sitting around twiddling my thumbs. And I think, you and I have talked about this before, the stereotype that exists of a lot of anchors. Mm-hmm. And people have approached me on the street to say, wow, what a job you have. That must be so nice. You go in and you have someone powder your face and they hand you your scripts and, you work for an hour a day, and it's like, well, if only. Well, I don't even think I'd like to do that because it would just bore me to tears. And even though I'm in front of the camera now as an anchor, I'm a storyteller, and I love reporting. I love breaking news, and I love telling stories, and I love telling compelling stories. So I have to be involved in the mechanics, so to speak, with the show.
So at the end of the day, what you're saying is you don't walk in, have your glass of scotch handed to you, have your nose powdered, chase the female staff around, and collect your $1 million a year.
No.
Well,
not even remotely close.
We are no longer friends. I was under a gross misconception.
Well, I'll buy you a drink afterwards. How's that?
Hey, that's okay. That's mighty bright of you. Dan, with so much information becoming increasingly available, via the internet and via electronic resources, like you say, you hop up in the morning and you're online and you're mm-hmm. looking for all kinds of things, and things are so readily available. Do you think that nightly television news for anchor people like yourself or anchor persons or mm-hmm. whatever the politically correct term is for that? I don't want to call you Ron Burgundy, the anchor man, but do you think that it's possible that folks like yourself and Kathy Mueller could become a less integral part of the average Ontarians' day, or will there always be a need for that personal contact?
Bearing in mind that being an anchor, I obviously am going to be, there's a certain bias on mm-hmm. my part. But having said that, I think there was actually just a series of surveys done nationally that illustrate the point that a lot of people, in fact, the majority of Canadians, still want to sit down and get a sense of what's going on in their own backyard. And with the plethora of information that's out there, I mean, it's almost reached a point where we're facing information overload. And I do not for a second want to detract from the work that's going on online and in the blogosphere, too. I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's citizen democracy, it's citizen journalism, and the pros and cons that come with that. And a vigilant democracy is a successful democracy. And
a con being, i.e., maybe Perez Hilton or something.
I'll leave that to you to decide. But
okay, I'm going to interrupt one last time and tell my listeners, yes, that's a con. it's a con in the sense of pro versus con, and it's also a con. Quit spending your money on that.
Yeah. But again, to come back to the original point, yeah, I do think we are relevant.
Yes.
In fact, I know we're relevant because it's been interesting. I mean, we've talked about the decline of conventional television mm-hmm. and how we're just, a drop in a not only a 500-channel universe, a 1,500-channel universe,
mm-hmm.
and yet, and this isn't tub-thumping on my part, it's just to illustrate a point, but last year, for example, we recorded the highest viewership for our news programs in the station's 50-year history.
Really?
And when you think about it, when you go back to the 1950s and 60s, when you had a choice of, two channels, even bearing in mind the increase in population and obviously the increase of television sets in homes over a period of the last 40 years, it still is quite astounding that even in light of everything that we keep hearing about the demise of conventional television, and yet here in London, it's actually gone the other way, where you have more and more people tuning in to our supper hour newscast and our late night newscast. So mm-hmm. that's heartening. But I also think, we have a sense of being able to put things into perspective for people. And I think if you provide compelling journalism, if you can tell stories that relate to the viewer, then you're always going to be relevant. And I think we're seeing that reflected in you know, some of the numbers, you know, that we've enjoyed over the past few years.
Well, and yeah, that's compelling information as it is. I was unaware of that. I mean, I try to stay well informed mm-hmm. as to what's going on in the Ontario media. But when you consider, like you say, now that we have, you know, the internet, electronic sources, mm-hmm. there's, you know, people.
And they're all
around.
Important. You know, I don't want to sit here and say as well, you know, as an anchor at a conventional television station, you know, I rely upon the internet myself, mm-hmm. and I read those blogs, I go online, and I look at things. But at the same time, just the way that we are able to gather information, show people what's going on in their community every day. Can we do better? Of course we can always do better. Mm-hmm. And that's the attitude that we have here. You know, we don't sit and rest on our laurels, and we know that we're not always perfect, but we're always striving, and we're doing our very best to provide a service. And that's really how you have to look at it, providing a service that is relevant and is compelling and is meaningful.
And I think with that, too, despite the fact that, you know, I can walk into an upscale coffee shop downtown that shall remain nameless, mm-hmm. despite the fact there's numerous of them. But, you know, I can pop up my laptop. I've got wireless internet right there. They've yep. got numerous different newspapers mm-hmm. for sale, whether it's the Toronto Star, the London Free Press, the London Times from England, for that yep. matter, the New York Times.
And yet you still watch us.
Exactly. That's my point. I mean, you can. There's so many different mediums. I can walk around with my BlackBerry on and get news sent to it, you know, at the, you know, drop of a hat. Yep. But for some reason, maybe because I have an appreciation for media and journalism more than mm-hmm. the average person, but for some reason, people, it's almost like an innate desire that, like you say, we want to sit down and we want to have the news given to us and, yeah. and delivered, like you say, in a timely, professional, cordial
yeah,
manner.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what journalists do provide is a sense of context, because there's so much, put it so well, there's so much information just floating around out there, but mm-hmm. yet it's hard sometimes, and even as myself, as someone who's, you know, been trained as a journalist to try and take all of these atoms of information and to place it in context. And I think that's where we strive to remain relevant. I think we're doing a very good job of it, mm-hmm. is to take all of that information and to provide context.
Absolutely.
It's difficult, though, in the course of, you know, a one-hour newscast to try and, you know, touch upon everything that's going on around us, not only in our community, but around the world. I've in fact, you know, heard, you know, from a few people to say, you know, why do you cover international news? Why should I care about what's going on in Pakistan? My simple answer to that is that we have to acknowledge the fact that we live in a community that continues to evolve, and that we have so many new Canadians joining our ranks in our communities and enriching them. People from around the world, and you don't think for a second that there are people here in London who want to know what's going on in Pakistan, for example, the crisis that has unfolded over there since the assassination of Ms. Bhutto,
yes.
Just to give an example. So, you know, we're trying to evolve as well as our community evolves, and because, like I say, I mean, a really good television newscast should be an accurate reflection of the community you serve. And the second that you deviate from that, then you become less relevant, and I think that will be, you know, reflected in your overall viewership in the long run.
Absolutely. You know, when you mentioned the assassination of Benazir Bhutto, that made me think, obviously part of your job is to relate unfortunate and sometimes tragic events, mm-hmm. and like you say, being true to your local audience or the community that you serve. One thing that comes to mind that I think you and I have talked about in the past was the unfortunate case in St. Thomas of the young girl that was assaulted yes. by her father online, live for that matter. I mean, mm-hmm. how horrible is that? I mm-hmm. mean, I don't think you can even put into words how bad that would be. Do you find that, obviously, when emotions are stirred, is it hard for yourself when you're standing in front of the camera in stand and deliver mode? Is it difficult to remain reserved when obviously something like that would clearly upset any rational person,
yeah,
I should say.
No, I understand what you're saying. First and foremost, I'm a human being just like you are. Mm-hmm. And when I'm cut, I bleed. At the same time, I have a professional responsibility to my viewers to deliver to them the information, and removing myself from that. I'm not there to give editorials. I'm not there to give my opinion. I'm there to provide the information and to allow the viewer to decide for himself or herself how they feel on a certain topic. At the same time, unless you've been hiding in a cave somewhere for the past 20 years,
Bin Laden.
You have you have developed certain biases. Let's face it.
That was an editorial.
That's why you said it. We all have certain biases. We all have certain passions. We all have certain inclinations and leanings. What's important, though, is it's not so much bias. It's fairness, and as long as you provide both sides of the story. But get back to the human element, and I think that's what you were trying to get at. There are a lot of stories that have touched me deeply, and you can't help but to be affected by them. An example I'll give is in 1998, I was working as a reporter in Nova Scotia, and at about 1 o'clock in the morning, I got a phone call from my news director saying, "We need you in Peggy's Cove. An airliner has gone down." And I spent a week of my life out there as the RCMP was, bringing in bodies or portions of.
Just to clarify, and I hate to interrupt you so much, Dan. That was the Swiss Air flight. Yeah, I remember
Swiss Air 111 in September of 1998. And for a week, I mean, we were so wrapped up in the fact that our cell phones were constantly ringing, and, you know, we needed to talk to Winnipeg, and we needed to file this for Toronto, and we needed to do this for Ottawa. But at the same time, I remember, and what also touched me deeply was seeing the families that were brought over from Europe and from New York by Swiss Air, and they had a memorial service out on the rocks, and you see people, you know, falling to their knees and crying for, you know, that wife that person will never see again, or that child they'll never see again. And it was probably 2 or 3 days after I went back to Sydney, where I was stationed at the time. And, I fell into a funk for a few days, because it was just, you know, when you're surrounded by so much tragedy and human suffering, I mean,
and genuine emotion,
a genuine emotion. And if you're a sensitive human being at all, that's going to affect you. And
absolutely.
I mean, you know, that case that you mentioned in St. Thomas, I mean, let's face it, as a society, we take a very dim view of what has happened there. And certainly, you know, when we use words like sickening, horrific, we're not stepping out of bounds or coming across with, you know, some sort of bias from a station point of view or from a news or an editorial point of view, because obviously society itself sees this as sickening and as horrific and as awful. And so, we are affected by it, but at the same time, you know, we all do our best to be professionals. The other thing I'll relate to you is one of the most iconic moments in broadcasting. Walter Cronkite on November 22nd of 1963.
Yes.
Here was a man who had just a few weeks prior had interviewed a president who had become a close friend, John Kennedy.
Yeah.
And when he received the flash bulletin over the wire that the president had been pronounced dead, I mean, we all remember, you know, you've probably, you know, watched it in class or watched it on the History Channel, where he, you know, takes away his glasses, his voice breaks, and you can see the tears glistening in his eyes as he announces that, you know, the president has passed on. That was a human moment, and I don't think anyone, in retrospect, criticized Cronkite for, first and foremost, being a human being, and B, being an American citizen who just lost his president under very tragic circumstances.
And sitting with you here now, for the listener, for the benefit of the listeners out there who, you know, obviously can't see you face to face as I can, it's evident, you know, not that you're having a breakdown by any means, but it's evident that I can tell that event at Peggy's Cove obviously has, you know, burned itself into your psyche and obviously did have a profound impact.
Oh, and it will
on
be with me
are.
until the day I pass.
Yeah, exactly. Terrible these things happen, but as you say, I mean, it's a job that you have to do. Someone has to do it, and, you know, we're the better for it that there's, you know, people like yourself who do it well. Just want to quickly change gears here, Dan,
sure.
If you don't mind. Before we run out of time, just ask a few quick question and answers. Whatever comes to mind, just fire away.
Oh, this could be Freudian.
Yeah. Well, And any perverse Freudian slips will be edited for the sake of content.
No,
but
they won't.
I just what was that?
I said no, they won't.
Yeah, no.
That makes compelling radio.
Let's be honest.
I'm just kidding.
Well, within the bounds of good taste,
sure.
Barring any obscene profanity, which I can't really foresee flying out of your mouth, but not while we're at the A Channel studio, anyway.
No.
Just a little segment I've done with a few of my guests, and it's always gone down pretty well. It's just a little segment I like to call Casual Questions with August Donnelly.
Let's do it.
So the first question is just very straightforward. Dan, are you a chocolate or vanilla kind of guy?
Chocolate.
Next question. If a man alone in the woods says something aloud, will his spouse still say he's wrong?
Yes. That's just inherent to human nature. And you know what? If you're a smart guy, the sooner you figure that out, the better.
Yeah. The old saying, a closed mouth catches no feet, or
that's
no,
right.
Or a closed mouth catches no flies.
Yeah.
Silence is golden.
I hear you, brother.
Next one. What was the scariest or most shocking moment that you recall while at the A-Channel studio, or maybe just in your career in front of the camera, so to speak?
Well, actually, this one's a pretty good one. I think it was in 2003. I had to cover the London International Air Show, and as part of it, Captain Idiot Stick here agreed to go up in a biplane.
Captain Idiot Stick, for sake of clarification.
That would be me.
Oh, that was you.
That would be me.
Captain Idiot Stick.
I agreed to go up in this biplane and do a bunch of stunts. Not me personally. I was just strapped to this thing. But anyway, you know, being inverted 50 feet off the runway at about, I don't know, 150 or 200 knots, that didn't bother me. Going completely vertical at about, I don't know, 5,000 feet in what's called the hammerhead maneuver, where the engine actually conks out because it will not climb any higher.
Ah.
And the thing flips over backwards, and the next thing you know, you're spiraling towards Earth, and then you pray. And in this case, fortunately, the engine caught. But the thing that I guess scared me the most was that this aircraft was piloted by a retired U.S. Marine Corps jet jockey, and, you know, still had the demeanor, still had the brush cut. Pre-flight flight routine, he was briefing me on the various escape systems, which was pretty simple. They roll the aircraft over, you let the seatbelt go, and you drop out.
With a parachute,
Yes. Okay. Yes, with a parachute. But the funniest part is he came up to me, and he hands me this, paper bag and says, this is your barf bag, son, but I will say this. You will not get sick in my airplane. And, I mean, if you just saw, I mean, he was like the quintessential U.S. Marine Corps drill sergeant. If you think of all those movies Platoon and Full Metal Jacket.
I was just going to say Arlie Ermey from Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket. Perfect.
Beautiful.
Or Clint Eastwood in Heartbreak Ridge.
He was Arlie Ermey. Just a younger version, but the brush cut and the demeanor. And, yeah, you will not get sick in my airplane. And it's like, no, sir, I won't. I even said it with a drawl, I think.
For fear of being shot.
Yeah, exactly. Or dropped upside down. And
for fear of being delivified.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
It was, I don't know, not so much scary, but it was humorous and scary at the same time.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. Isn't Disney World really just a big people trap operated by a mouse?
Well, you could certainly make that argument. I think that Walt, he certainly had his pros and cons, didn't he?
Do guns kill people, or do people kill people?
People kill people, and that's not to say, I mean, I certainly don't, you know, want to give the impression I'm some sort of gun nut. You know, and, you know, just having, you know, been in the armed forces, I mean, I had weapons training, and I am, you know, familiar with weapons. But having said that, in the final analysis, it's the decisions that people make that ultimately decides, you know, what happens.
Well, Dan, I have to thank you again very, very much. It was a pleasure sitting down with you. And,
not a problem.
Having a conversation. And
enjoyed the chat.
Well, thank you.
You know, and if you have a black hole that you need to fill in the future, just give me a call.
I have a black hole. Well, if I have any...
If you need filler, just give me a shout.
Just give Dan a shout. We know you're good for it. We know you've got all kinds of stuff to talk about.
Well, so. There you go. And if as long as we have maybe two or three listeners who are still awake at the end of my answers, then, you know, maybe we've accomplished something.
Thanks again very much, Dan.
Not a problem.
Appreciate it. Folks, I'm all out of time. Join me again in a fortnight for another episode of Full Frontal. I'm on every other Monday night at 7:30 p.m. on Your Cure for Corporate Radio, CHRW 94.9 FM. In the meantime, if you have any questions for myself or for the show, you can reach me via email at august@chrwradio.com or visit my website at www.augustdonnelly.com. Until next time, remember, you've just spent 28 minutes of your life that you'll never get back.